Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about artist Adam Warren. Of course, I'm my co-host, J.D. from Saskatoon.
Dirty pair.
And also with us is the brother from another podcast, TV's Mr. Neil.
Author of the now award-winning DeCian superhero webcomic.
I saw that, and congratulations, Neil.
Thank you. Even though it's like the backhanded award, it's like, your comic used to suck, but now it doesn't.
Well,
no, I'm very grateful.
It didn't suck as much as other of our compatriots of the time, but let's move on. As always, we're going to start with the solicitations. So we have Archie Comics, Archie 659, getting closer to 666.
Only seven more months, and it'll all go to hell.
We have some Sonic furry ass shit here. We got that's Ben at comicconsource.com. Yes, come at me, bro. Anyways, we have Super Fighting Robot Mega Man, Volume 7. So let's move on. We have Aspen Comics, where we have people drawing like they want to be Mike Turner.
Sometimes succeeding, sometimes not.
Aspen Comics. Let's hope they have at least more than one face to draw. Actually, Neil noticed that when I said that to him. Neil's like, oh my god, you're right. They're all the same face.
Yeah, it is.
You mean they're all kind of awkwardly perfect and never blank with their big googly anime eyes?
That's right. Moving on, we have some B.M. Puppy Cat number 2. I have to bring that up or Kitty Hawk will hate us forever. We have Clive Barker's Hellraiser, which I know JT loves.
Oh, yes, please.
Yes. Did you get any strange puzzle boxes in the mail?
Yes, and they all go right into the recycling. Okay. I won't fall prey to that twice.
We have George Perez's Sirens.
Mighty nice covers on these.
Cover by George Perez.
Yes.
Well, it's Perez. I mean, would you expect anything less?
Nope. We have Jim Henson's The Storyteller. 1 of 4, Neil.
Yeah, I have no idea what to expect from this. Because while I love Jim Henson, it's like, the guy's dead, so he's not the one authoring this. So it could be good, it could be bad. I don't know.
I'm just wondering if it's going to have like a drawn version of John Hurt in it. Oh, it does!
Oh my god,
it is with Brian Henson's dog next to him. See, Neil?
Excellent.
Was that makeup or are John Hurt's ears really that big?
I don't know.
I remember that. I barely remember that series.
And fume, fume, fume. Anyways.
Peanuts.
Yes.
Again, not sure what to make of this, because it's like, the original author is dead. It's just kind of like coasting along on the characters. And, you know, I don't really know who's
It's just the same collection. It's just the same. It's a collection of existing Peanuts.
Oh, so it is original comics?
Yeah, it is original Schultz.
Okay.
Has there anyone been ballsy and or tired of living enough to try and do like...
I thought I had seen a few years ago that someone did try to do new Peanuts.
That'd be like someone trying to have the balls to tell Bill Watterson how that he should do a Calvin Hobbes sequel.
Not that'd be like names. Somebody waiting for... Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about. It'd be like somebody waiting for Watterson to die and then having the temerity to do new Calvin and Hobbes.
Should be about Calvin's daughter. Shut up. Anyways, moving on. We have some Dark Horse here with... Ooh, actually, I like this. Comic Book Legal Defense Fund has the Banned Books Week Handbook.
Yeah, I got that this week. And I was like flipping through that. I was like, Bone is banned in like Texas.
Yes, it is. Which is funny because I've seen it on sale here.
How is Bone banned in Texas?
How is anything banned?
Maybe it had a story that was critical of the cattle industry.
No, still, it's like,
that's Texas. How we got rid of Oprah.
Okay.
See, now Neil's not too upset about that.
No, it's still, it's like, I...
Hey, that's totally social justice there.
But, you know, not to be super patriotic, but this is America. Like, how is anything banned? I mean, I thought like it had to be pretty much snuff film to get banned here.
Possibly.
Anyways, we got some Dark Horse here. We got
New Criminal Macabre.
Yes.
Finally.
Yes, Macabre. We got some DC Comics, and moving on,
isn't that Macabre?
Macabre. It's the epitome of hard to pronounce words.
It's like you and Conan.
Conan?
Or Mark Miller.
Millar?
I've heard the man pronounce his own name.
Yeah, I heard the man say that he was surprised to see a black person with Down syndrome, because he was surprised they were actually the same species.
Moving on.
By the way, people, this did happen. Mark Millar did say that. So, we have Dynamite Entertainment with Bionic Woman, season 4. Neil, who starred as the Bionic Woman again?
Oh,
wasn't that Lindsay Wagner?
Was it?
Pretty sure it was. Oh, Neil's going to do
something.
Yeah,
it was Lindsay Wagner. Yeah.
See, usually Neil knows these things.
Yeah, but I didn't really watch The Bionic Woman. I saw like one episode, and I was really young, and it was one where she lifted a car, like the back end of a car with one arm, and I'm just like, wait a minute, wouldn't her back go out? And I was 6. I could see through the plot holes. At 6 years old.
Well, she should have been in a bathing suit in that scene then.
Yeah, then I would have watched it. I would have watched the whole show, series.
All right, let's move forward. We got some IDW here. We got Doberman number 3, about everyone's favorite species. We got Godzilla Cataclysm number 2 of 5.
Let me see.
I don't know the monster that's on this cover that's fighting Godzilla. Looks like a crocodile with tentacles.
Let me take a look.
Oh, it's Biollante.
What?
Yeah.
It's Biollante.
A mutated rosebush with human and Godzillian DNA mixed into it.
Yeah, he was in the second movie of the second Godzilla series of movies.
Like after that was like after Godzilla 85, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I bow to your knowledge. We have Judge Dredd. We have the Max, Maximized. We got.
I am the law.
It is. You betrayed the law. Law. God, I loved Armand Asante in that movie. It's like he's trying. It's not going to swallow your ego, Stallone.
We got some Image Comics. Nothing there.
Yep, that's Image Comics.
What, you didn't read Oddly Normal?
No.
Oddly enough, no. We got some Marvel Comics, and moving on, we got some...
Come on, man, it's not that bad. What, you don't like Daredevil by Mark Waid?
I love Daredevil by Mark Waid. That's the only shining light in the whole dark tunnel.
What about Rocket Raccoon?
I like Rocket. It's the thing is this, is there has to be something really, really special at Marvel to make me pick something up, and they haven't had that sort of special thing happen in a while.
Nothing marvelous.
So, no. Captain Marvelous.
Who had the Jack Sparrow swagger. But moving on, we got some Oni Press. Nothing I really see interesting there. Rebellion, we got some 2080. And Drudge Dead Complete Case Files Volume 23, trace paperback. So get your bowls ready, because we have some Udon Entertainment here. But no Street Fighter this week.
Breath of Fire.
Yes.
But you skipped over Super Genius Comics, Ben, with, you know,
with
my
your
personal.
Favorite book. Oh my god.
Is it still? I just gotta check here, see if it's still written by Mick Foley, because.
Oh, it is.
Yes. God bless you, mankind.
Look at the cover. You have the Hulkster ripping his shirt in the corner there in a gorilla.
What is that in the ring?
It's a gorilla.
Is that the Yeti?
I think it is.
Really, really obscure WCW reference I just made there.
Uh-huh. I don't
you
know
this. I can't wait until Mick Foley brings in the Shockmaster.
Oh, God. The Shockmaster.
Oh, it's so good. Come on, it was a bejeweled Stormtrooper helmet.
It was. And he was wearing a fur coat. And someone was off stage doing the voice. And it was clearly... the sync on the voice with the acting was just about as... No, it was actually worse than Steinbrenner on Seinfeld. Because you could tell on Seinfeld that performance was not in sync.
Do you know that they actually got the real Steinbrenner for an episode and then they thought, yep. Oh, he's terrible. We have to just get Larry David to do it again.
Yeah, Larry David was great as Steinbrenner.
Because Steinbrenner doesn't do it.
Yeah, you're not good at doing yourself.
It happens. I mean, Tiffany Grant once lost an Asuka voicing competition at a...
That's funny.
You remember she told us that story? And she's wearing the costume?
Yeah.
So we have JT's favorite books.
Xenoscope. Oh, boy.
And what variety?
Oh, so many delicious flavors of cheesecake.
Grim Fairy Tales.
Grim Fairy Tales, Tales of Terror. Grim Fairy Tales presents Robin Hood with a Y. Grim Fairy Tales present. You know what? Honestly, this is enough to make a man want to go back and read his own half-complete collection of Chaos Comics.
Ouch. Anyways, those are the solicitations for this week. We'll take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll have the topic of the show.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and animationaficionados.com.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Mike.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the internet's number one and longest running G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind?
It's Joe news, reviews, and interviews like you've never heard them before, delivered right to your MP3 player.
Our guests include Jason Marsden, Kevin Michael Richardson, and Matt Yang King from G.I. Joe Renegades, Larry Hama, Robert Atkins, and John Barber from IDW Publishing, and many more from around the online Joe community.
Yeah, it's guys talking about Joe. Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right, and we... Hey, again?
Come on, Chuck. We're just kidding, kinda.
Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right, and we... Okay, seriously, this is just getting ridiculous now.
It's What's on Joe Mind, every week on the Geekcast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
I suppose I still can't say something about Transformers, can I?
Good grief.
No. What about sports?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's all right.
It's action. It's drama. It's comedy. It's Decian, the superhero webcomic. Decian's got superhero antics and sexy girls. Read it now at Decian.com. Decian.com.
And now, back to the show.
And we're back to talk about Adam Warren. An artist that's very near and dear to our hearts, who has a very manga-ish art style.
In the early days, like, was literally cribbing off of, like, early anime and manga, yeah.
And back when he drew noses.
Yeah, he was kind of the American version of, oh, God, who's the guy who did Bubblegum Crisis? It was...
Oh, I love that guy.
Yeah, and if you give me, like, 5 seconds, I can have his name. Kenichi Sonoda.
Yes.
I mean, and for a while, like, their art styles are almost identical.
And in the thing is, in America, you know, the thing to remember in Japan, Dirty Pair was a light novel,
mm-hmm.
which means there was no manga. There was no Dirty Pair manga. For as, when Dirty Pair was at its peak, where it had an anime, it had OVAs, it had movies, but there was no manga. It was all light novels. It was all just words that were not brought over here. So what happened instead was there was a little publisher that said, okay, we want to have American Dirty Pair comics or American manga like Dirty Pair comics. And they got Adam Warren to do it.
Yeah. I'm not even sure that they were that the publisher was like, I think it was Adam Warren like was like bound and determined to bring Dirty Pair over, and he was the one who really pushed for it and got Sunrise to go. Or no, it wouldn't have been Sunrise. I don't remember who's the rights holder for Dirty Pair, but that was one of the concessions, that it couldn't be the Sunrise Dirty Pair, it couldn't be the light novel Dirty Pair, and so he had to come up with his own designs for the characters. And
yes,
I think his are very faithful while being their own thing.
There's this one very famous picture of the Dirty Pair that's on the Wikipedia article for Adam Warren's Dirty Pair. I think Neil knows the one I'm talking about.
I haven't gone to the Dirty Pair Wikipedia page.
It's a picture. It's a picture of Kay and Yuri walking into a room, and Yuri's a little apprehensive, but Kay's like, "These are our people," and something like that. It's hard to describe the picture because it's actually a really hilarious picture. It's a. And the thing is, it was teased that Adam Warren really wants to do a Dirty Pair Superman crossover.
Well, he did it one time. I don't know. That was a long time ago. That was like 20 years ago that he pitched that. And from what I remember, he wanted to do it because what the fuck type story is there than Superman meets the Dirty Pair?
Yes.
I mean, the ultimate like Boy Scout meets these two filthy girls in space bikinis, foul mouth, and
extremely destructive.
Yeah, extremely destructive. Basically leaves death in their path. Yet are always exonerated for any wrongdoing. Somehow the 3WA computer like always finds a way to find them innocent of all wrongdoing.
You would think that somebody would refuse to like underwrite their insurance because the massive amounts of property damage.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking massive.
And I just put in the chat the picture I'm talking about that people always refer to when they're talking about the Adam Warren.
Yeah, that's from, that is the one you see the most often. It's like, it's the one from, Fatal But Not Serious, where they're walking through a door, and you don't see it in this panel, but that's the one where Kay has a cast on her foot for the whole comic.
and
I think it was just an excuse to have like an anti-gravity backpack on Kay for the entire episode.
And the hair is so 80s.
Yeah, I love the hair. The thing about Adam Warren is that I think, I don't remember if it was him or this other guy, Charlie Nozawa, who kind of steered me in the correct direction, we'll say. Because before this came along, I was kind of into like Jim Lee and those assholes. And I'd be like, yeah, this is how you draw women. And then I see this, I'm like, I'm doing this all wrong. I'm like, women shouldn't have tiny little beady eyes and like these really, really super long, non-curvy legs. They should be soft and smooth and have big hair and big eyes.
In space bikinis.
Like they walked off the set of an 80s rock video.
Yeah, this is just like hair metal and anime all mixed together. And God, I miss this. It's like what people think of today as anime style is not what I think of as anime style. This is anime. The stuff that came out with you know, like Gunsmith Cats and Captain Tyler and Macross, all those styles. That's what I think of as anime. The fucking Yu-Gi-Oh, where everything's spiky, and I can't stand that.
The one thing is this picture. I think this is the peak of the Adam Warren style. You know?
Yeah. Well, he's had like multiple styles. I think there's at least three different eras. There's like the first era where it's like it was him and this other guy doing the first three books, and that had kind of a weird. It was still an anime style, but it was kind of weird. And then he got like super cute and cartoony for a while. That's his Konichi Sonoda era, which is what this is from. Mm. And then after that, he kind of went into a frog face era, and that's kind of what we're in right now. Yeah,
the frog noses again.
The noses started to disappear, and that kind of
looking at him. I was just saying, unless you look at him from the side.
Yeah, that kind of started to happen around. I'd say Grunge the Movie or like Run from the Future. Mm. But when those comics came around, that's when the noses started to go away.
I just wonder why he went in that direction. I wish I could ask him that one day.
I don't know. It's like I can understand from an expressiveness sort of thing. He's got a very expression heavy art style. But it's like some of it's I don't think it's very interesting to look at. I mean, he does more with the faces now than he used to, but it's like, I don't know, it's like no one's really cute anymore.
No, it's like when you look at his stuff like on Empowered, it's I love the fact that he seemed to his art style, like where he used to have like at max three or four characters in a good action scene, he's kind of evolved to the point where he can do, I want to say, almost like George Perez, like splash pages where you get like a dozen or more characters on there, but they're all fairly distinct and it's not that hard for you to follow the action through a piece like that. Mm. If you get what I mean, especially with Empower, because like I've read most of the Adam Warren stuff I've come in contact with. I've I know of Dirty Pair, but I've never read his Dirty Pair stuff. What got me into Adam Warren was the work that he used to do on, like, the Sundry Gen 13 and DC Comics they did through, like, the mid and late 90s. Like, was it Magical Drama Queen Roxy?
Yes.
Where Grunge has, like, an anime-inspired dream where, Freefall from Gen 13 is basically having, like, this Sailor Moon-esque fantasy adventure. And he wakes up and he's like, it was all a dream. You know, like that sort of thing. It's like, you were there and you were there. And then he did this one shot for DC, I think within a year or two of that, give or take, which was Titans, Papers, Scissors, Stone.
Yeah.
Where it's like set in like the year three. I think it was basically set in the same time, like the same time frame as Legion of Superheroes, or it was one universe off to the side or something, but it's like the year 3000 something. And these like characters get like, they all have like weird powers, or they're trying to solve this mystery, and they end up downloading the consciousness of Batman into the mind of like this. I forget that the redhead guy was like a robot or he was a cyborg or something, but they basically download Batman's mind into this dude's body. And not only does Batman have to try and save the day, he's got to put up with a bunch of squabbling superpower teenagers. And being that it's Bruce Wayne Batman, he's just like, take me now, Lord, throughout the whole book. And after he did Scissors, Paper, Stone like that, I forget what he did after that. Because the next thing I knew from him that he did was that he did the Live Wires miniseries from Marvel. But that was in, like, you know, 03, 04. So there's, like, almost, like, that 10-year gap that I'm not entirely certain what he was up to in that time.
Empowered. Empowered's been going on for a long time.
Well, yeah, he used to do stuff for magazines. He used to do covers for manga that we never saw. Like, there was a whole manga series of Star Wars in Japan where he did all the covers.
That was back when he did those.
Yeah. And I think he's got those on DeviantArt, actually, so you could actually go find those.
Yep. See them right here.
Yeah, he used to do... I think the very earliest I saw him was in this unofficial PlayStation magazine called PSM, which was a kick-ass magazine for a couple of years. before it became the official PlayStation magazine. It was kind of this, like, rebel video game magazine for PlayStation fans. It was right after the Saturn died that I started subscribing to it. I'm like, who is this guy?
And then they became the man.
Yeah, then he became the man. And then I realized he was doing Dirty Pair, and I'm like, oh, I gotta get this.
Russian Roulette? It's... No, Dirty Pair is the one thing that I think is the cherry on top of his career, because Dirty Pair was the thing that got him into professional art, because the thing is, he actually attended the Kubert School for 1 year before dropping out, and he was, like, disenfranchised with the whole American comic book system until, like, he took a break on Christmas, and he got exposed to anime, the Dirty Pair, you know, anime specifically. And then he became like, oh, I have to do this now. Actually, Neil, he's a lot like you.
Yeah.
And he actually tracked down the people who owned the rights and begged them, like you said, begged them to do Dirty Pair.
Yeah, he really went after it, and he got it. Like I said, the first couple stories are kind of they're kind of wonky to read, and they're very strange style. And then he kind of hit his stride around A Plague of Angels, which is probably the longest one.
But that's what worked.
Yeah,
and you know, it's almost like he's the proto Neil.
Well, I think I'm like about 50 steps behind him. He's like the guy I can never be, because I just look at how much detail he puts in the backgrounds. I'm like, I can barely do backgrounds. I just cry when I see his backgrounds. It's like, at best, I can sort of do like expressive faces and like kind of keep up with him at that stage.
Mm. Yeah. Still, it was fun.
Yeah.
No, it's like I said, Live Wires is really like the first time I knew, outside of like those two one shots, that's really what kind of sold me on his art, was like the kind of faux anime style like that. And it's just something like, never mind the frog faces. We understand he grew to despise noses on his comic book characters for some godforsaken reason. But it's something about his art. Like, it's just, I think it's one thing I like about his art, and you see that in a lot of it, especially in Empowered, which is almost pretty much just, there's no inking. It's all basically really heavy pencils, is there's not always a solid line on the character. And that was very prominent in a lot of stuff with, in Live Wires, because of all the characters, it's just like, I think it kind of helps convey movement in a sense. And it's just the way he uses like the broken lines and just the placement of everything, that it just kind of comes together kind of organically. Because you look at a lot of like the characters in Livewire, is like, he kind of ran the gamut in body types. I mean, you had this dude Cornfed, who was, you know, basically like a good old boy, grew up on the farm. There's a gothic Lolita, who's like, well, it's a Japanese robot girl in like the gothic Lolita maid costume. There's Hollow Point Ninja, who's like this black guy who's the stealth thing. Like, there's all, it really doesn't matter what body type he's drawing, he just manages to nail it in his own unique way. Mm. Which is what I think, and that's part of the reason why I like Empowered so much. I mean, well, besides the sexy time fun of the comic, some of my friends have called me on this, is like, well, you know, you make so much crap about, like, you know, Zenoscope and all that. And I was like, well, I'm not saying there isn't a story there. Like, I've read some Zenoscope. There's some interesting stuff there. Don't get me wrong. It's just, I'm not the type of guy to read something like that and pay attention to the words. I'm just there for the art. And it's something about the story in Empowered about, well, what were they nicknamed? Or just Emp, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I haven't read my novels. They're buried somewhere in my bookshelf and other books. It's this girl who's like this low-tier superhero who's really in it for the right reasons, but she's got the world's flimsiest superpowered suit, which leads to a lot of bondage, because the more you tear it up, and the more it loses power, and then we get a whole lot of... You get the feeling that he read some Golden Age Wonder Woman when he was coming up with Empowered?
Possibly.
I mean, for the sheer amount of, like, bondage that Amp ends up in every volume of this series, and I mean, by this point, like, what, 8, 9 volumes in, and it's pretty much a well-known joke that all you have to do is rip her costume and tie her up, and you've defeated her. I know, it's like, what do you guys think of Empowered?
I sort of enjoy parts of it, but at other times I think it's a little bit, how should I say it, on the nose a little bit. It's just, you know, it's played a little too straight for the straight laugh. And because some of the naming of people and the naming of villains and groups just comes off a little, like I said, a little on the nose. Which is odd because he wasn't drawing any. It's
the one I've been exposed to the least, I'll say that.
I think he's having a little too much fun with it. Because, like I said, it doesn't feel quite as... Not that there's should be super ultra serious work in there, but it just doesn't feel quite as believable as the peril that you feel in some of his other works.
Yeah. Because I think, especially, like, say, the first kind of third of what's come out so far in this stuff, the super heroic sexy hijinks were fairly balanced out by the story of Imp and just that she... And I love how they play with her, like, how he plays with her character. Is like, she's got this ridiculous hot body, but she has like the world's worst case of self-image because she just thinks she's fat and ugly, and well, she can't wear underwear with her super suit because of reasons that are probably a little too adult to go into for this show. And that was fairly balanced out, but as time goes on and he built this mythology, and that's kind of the crux of a lot of stories like this, that if you don't kind of balance out like certain aspects, you just kind of lose your tail. Cause like I still love reading Empowered, but the last couple of novels, it's just been really meh. Mm-hmm. Like the story is still there with Empowered, like trying to, you know, she's got the what's the one girl, Sista Spooky, who's like this girl who hated all the statuesque blondes in her school. And then she made like the deal with the devil, and that's why they all look like that. So now she's got this super hot bod and magical superpowers because her demon provider screwed up. And, you know, it's Amp's at war with her and this douchebag named Captain Havoc, who's like, what if the, what's his name? Ted McGinley from Revenge of the Nerds had superpowers. That's basically Captain. He's a frat boy with superpowers, and that sort of stuff is still there, but it's really weighed down by some of the really dark stuff that's come into the series in the last couple of novels, which is why I think I know a lot of my friends that have read this have kind of passed on the last few volumes, because they like kind of the lighter mix of like hijinks and superheroism in the first few volumes. And that's something that I don't think a lot of people realize about Adam Warren, is that like he is, like he's writing and drawing all this. You know, it's kind of his love letter to, like, you know, like the conventions of superhero comics and like the sexy time fun that he had with drawing Dirty Pair and all that. And he's trying to make his own mark on it.
Right.
So
I understand that and I appreciate it. But like I said, it's like you said, it sort of gets jarring with tonal shift.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it hurts the story, because the tonal shift just gets so jarring. It's like it messes with you while you're reading it, and you really can't enjoy the story anymore. And that's always been my problem with Empowered, because like I said, it's trying to have its cake and eat it too. With, oh, you know, here are these ridiculous characters. Oh, and by the way, the stakes are high in serious business.
Yeah, it's just like you said. It's just really that tonally, it's just hard to balance all that stuff out. I mean, I loved, I gotta just look it up on his wiki here, because he did this one Iron Man miniseries for Marvel a few years ago. I don't think he did the art on it. I think he just wrote it. And that was one of the first times that I got into, like, looking at it more than the, more than for what it is. Like, you know, it kind of looked a little deeper. Because he did Live Wires, he wrote and he did the art on that. He did write Iron Man Hypervelocity, which is basically this tale. You find throughout the first part of the series, it's basically Iron Man's being chased by like this Cape Killer squad of like S.H.I.E.L.D. agents, and then you find out it's not Tony in the suit. It's a Ghost in the Machine story, because there's like this incomplete copy of Tony Stark's mind running around in an Iron Man suit. And the whole reason these Cape Killers are after him is because they think this Iron Man suit's gone rogue, which made it for an interesting story. And just like looking at his stuff here, he did that. He worked on the Marvel Mangaverse Fantastic Four one shot. Now, did you guys ever read the Mangaverse stuff?
I have.
What did you think of that?
I like the issue where a Black Cat and the Mary Jane made out.
Fairly certain I missed that one. Because believe me, I know all about that. Man. But yeah, like...
I was surprised we didn't hear the sounds of running footsteps and the door shutting as you ran to the comic book store to get that issue.
No, it's that I have a complete collection of the Marvel Mangaverse series.
Hey, but you don't remember that scene. Neil, if you read the Mangaverse and that scene was in it, would you remember it?
Yes.
Above all the other scenes.
Yes. I'd be like, yes, I remember wrecking that issue.
but JT, nothing.
I honestly don't remember that.
I'll give you a scan.
Just saying. Because I remember, if that's the Marvel Mangaverse Fantastic Four one-shot that it's coming up here, is they turned the Fantastic Four into basically Ben, Johnny, or Joanna, because they turned her into like this bitchy redhead, and Sue, who has a near psychotic detachment from reality. It's like, Sue... Like, and they all generate like giant kaiju-esque super forms, and Sue's is her giant invisible friend, and Sue sends it out, and they're like, Sue, go kick his ass. And she's like, okay. Oh, Lord. Where the fuck was I?
Neil?
What issue is that?
Wow, I was asleep at the wheel that day.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
You don't remember that one, do you?
No.
No, and rest assured, after we're done recording, I am going down to my collection. I'm digging that out, and I'm finding that.
Okay.
And he's going to lock all the doors, draw the shades, and...
That actually is really funny that you don't remember that.
Light some candles.
Yeah, put on a little Barry White.
Well, whatever works for you, it's...
No, I just completely forgot about that, apparently.
Yeah, in that universe, Mary Jane's Spider-Woman.
Oh, yeah, and none of them have... Neither her nor Peter actually have superpowers.
They're part of the Spider Ninja Clan.
Yeah. And Venom is Peter's evil half-brother. Yeah. So suffice it to say, I mean, getting back to Adam Warren, he has done some really cool stuff.
He's got a wicked sense of humor.
Well, yeah. Which is half the reason I got into Empowered, was just for the humor.
I mean... I've just been like flipping through stuff for the whole show, and I've got like Grunge the Movie in my hands right now, and I'm just gonna spoil the ending. It's like the bad guy gets killed because there's a haystack and a tornado rips through for some reason, and the hay just starts like stabbing through his body because, you know, it's like, you know, the rumor is that like being a tornado.
Mythbusters detested that, by the way.
Yeah, and as he's dying, he's like, ah, just like on the Discovery Channel.
So it does talk about that.
Yes. Like, I mean, this whole comic is just like fucking awesome with the jokes.
There you go. That's what led up to the kiss. So there you go.
Wow. So she plays for both sides.
Anything wrong with that?
Absolutely nothing.
Nothing wrong with that.
Not at all. In fact, if you do have a problem with that, too damn bad.
But this isn't Adam Warren.
I know, but it's the Marvel Mangaverse, which was partially started by Adam Warren.
Yeah. True.
And Ben Dunn of Ninja High School.
But that's been done.
I'm going to get the gong.
We're playing Let's Make a Deal now?
Maybe a whammy.
You hand me something and you expect me not to use it?
I was hoping that would just coast by and no one would say that.
Neil, we're talking about Ben. Has anything ever coasted by and he hasn't picked up on it?
No.
Just saying.
Yes. Anyways, you know, not much else we can talk about right now. I think overall we're saying...
I don't know about that. I mean, like, I remember one of the funny things about Adam Warren's Dirty Pair run is that some of the things he came up with got filtered back into Dirty Pair Flash. And I'm talking specifically about the character of Shasti.
Yes.
The rogue angel.
Yes.
That became Lady Flair. I mean, it's never been officially confirmed, but I've talked to Ryan Kinnaird about that, and he was just like, yeah, we're pretty much, we know that that's what that is. And yeah, the Dirty Pair was always kind of like a cyberpunkish world, but he made it like so cyberpunk, and then that also became like a big component of Dirty Flair. I mean, Dirty Pair Flash even just became like this total cyberpunk dystopian future world where the moon is like half destroyed. It's like, how the fuck did that happen?
Well, they sort of kind of touched that a little bit.
Yeah, it's like the original pair who are, you know, the spoiler alert, like one of them is the bad guy of Dirty Pair Flash.
The first set of OVA episodes, at least. There's like several different OVA episode sets.
Yeah, and I like that you don't get a clear shot of it, but the original pair kind of look like the original Kay and Yuri from the old series, the old anime.
That was kind of the intent.
Yeah.
Like saying that this is like a spiritual successor and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so many good things in these comics. I mean, just I know that there are more examples of like characters that he created that kind of got co-opted back into Japan. But yeah, god damn it, these are good comics. Yeah, if this did not exist, I don't think Decian would not be what it is right now. That's for sure.
That is true.
Well, he certainly changed. I mean, just from, you look at how popular Gen 13 was in the 90s. I mean, it was one of the most popular titles from Image. And that his art style probably turned a lot of people on to, like, manga and anime, just with that, his love of that coming through in his art. So
yeah, it was kind of like a convergence of so many things, because, like, video games around that time were like, they were from Japan, so you got a lot of the style through that. And then the anime boom of the early 90s hit, and then you have this guy who just was able to ride the wave. You know, Adam Warren had the right style at the time to kind of get big, and had
the right stuff.
Yeah, he was in the right stuff, and did a lot of great stuff for not just with Dirty Pair, but with Image Comics, and with Gen 13, because Gen 13, like, it didn't really interest me that much. I mean, it kind of just seemed like a X-Men knockoff. It granted, the main character was like hot as shit, but like as soon as Adam Warren started getting it, I'm like, well, I gotta get this.
Yeah. No, I mean, for me, it was weird. Like, Teen Titans, like, the comic book, specifically, like, the new Teen Titans, that's, it is one of my favorite teen team comics, but I didn't really get reading into that. Like, I was reading Gen 13 for a while, and then a friend of mine was like, well, you know, this is, like, the new Teen Titans. And I was like, what's the new Teen Titans? You know, and he loaned me, like, a pile of comics and got me into that. So, that, like, not only just his art style on Gen 13, but just that title itself got me into other comics. So, I mean, and you can't really look at Gen 13 and not... I don't think you can look at Gen 13 and not think Teen Titans in some respect.
A little bit.
Okay, that's true.
The good Teen Titans. The... this reminds me of a discussion I had in Kitty Hawk's chat room where someone says, oh, you know, did you hear they're going to make a live-action Teen Titans show? And they said, well, they better not make it like a comic. I said, oh, yeah, that Marv Wolfman guy, what does he know about writing? Well, Neil's laughing, a forced laugh, because he had some disagreements about how Wolfman handled Transformers.
Well, I'm just saying he wrote one of the worst episodes ever. And it shouldn't have been the worst, because it was bringing back the hero of the series.
He was dumped in, he had 2 days to write it. What do you expect?
That's true. But as I've said to Blanchard, it's like, just because you can make an excuse for something doesn't mean that it's worth watching.
Well, come on, Neil. I love a Decepticon Raider in King Arthur's Court.
That one is Shakespeare compared to the Return of Optimus Prime.
What about the wizard using his magic to resuscitate the Autobots with lightning?
That was a bit much. You know, that reminds me of something. You know, one thing missing from Dirty Pair or from Adam Warren's work in Dirty Pair is that there's no magical thinking, and there's no pretentious philosophical bullshit like you have in Ghost in the Shell. You know exactly what you're getting into. It's two girls, and they're going to kick a lot of ass and destroy a lot of shit, and a lot of people are going to die, and there's no message. There's no message at all.
Somehow it's almost nihilistic.
Yeah, it's almost nihilistic, but it's not depressing at the end. It'll put a smile on your face.
It's cheerfully nihilistic.
You don't realize how bad things really are because you're having so much fun.
Yeah. But, you know, the scenes that I always hate are the scenes where, like, in Ghost in the Shell, where, like, the entity that's in the machine is, like, having a philosophical discussion. He's like, what is a, you know, what is personhood?
Memory?
Yeah, he's literally having a debate in the middle of the fucking movie. I'm like, this is not fucking happening. This fucking bullshit. Whereas I can open up Dirty Pair and that will never happen. It's always going to be off the wall destruction.
What was that philosophical question that was put in Urusei Yatsura?
Urusei Yatsura. I don't know. It depends on.
You know, it was in the second movie. He actually did that guy's voice once. About time.
Where it's like, yeah, that was bullshit, but it was kind of, at the end, they kind of weaseled out of it. But he was just like, oh God, how did that line go? It was like, things are a mess for you because you think time and space are objective things. And really what's going on is that they're in a dream. And that's all it is. And that's why nothing makes sense. Which is a great cop out, and I wish like Ghost in the Shell would have been like that, where like they just wake up and that's the explanation. It's like, no, there was no reason to any of the questions we asked. We just wanted to fuck with you.
Well, you know the manga artist Shiro, he just wanted to tell a story about a lesbian cyborg, and then he sort of got off the rails. Yeah,
if that fucking movie had been more like the manga. But, you know, I don't know.
No, he knew what he was selling. He was selling calendars of swimsuits and stuff like that. He knew what he was making.
I was watching this movie. I'm like, I know I've seen better versions of this. Why is this not that? why is this movie so boring? And like, there are people out there gnashing their teeth. They're like, I love Ghost in the Shell. It's the best anime ever.
Best in Hell.
Fuck you.
Best in Hell. Now,
I'm sorry, and you're just talking about the movies, not like Standalone Complex.
No,
right?
I'm not talking about Standalone Complex. That's in a different. That's totally different. But it could just be that I'm from a different era. I'm like, I'm the Golgo 13 Macross guy. the dirty hair guy.
To be fair, that's what Adam Warren was. He was the Golgo 13 Macross guy.
Yeah, and I could tell that he was that guy. He was from that era, and that's kind of that's a big part of what connected with me.
That's what saved his life, honestly, because he thought he was about to quit art before he saw that.
And it's just so much imagination. Like, he just makes up technology. This is like Star Trek times 10. He's just every single story, he's got like some made up technology, and you know, like anti gravity this and that, and EMP this and that, and like tattoos and T-shirts that change the image on the fly.
Well,
it's
the thing
like
is,
stuff,
he doesn't...
stuff that doesn't exist, and it's just there to be fun.
And that's the thing is, he doesn't think about, oh, I need to write a series Bible about why this works and have a diagram of what the ship looks like and all this bullshit.
Yeah, he never explains, which is good.
Because Neil and I were actually talking about this a couple weeks ago. The problem with an amateur writer is sometimes a writer, a young writer, sees something like the full set of notes that like J.R.R. Tolkien has at the end of his life, and they're like, oh, when I build a universe, I gotta be this detailed about all this shit. It's like, no!
Yeah, I don't mean to say that you should never explain, but like, if you're thinking about doing an appendices, just fucking stop. No one's gonna read that shit. Just trust in your audience that they're gonna be on board. Like I said in another show, it's like Superman's glasses. If you just say in this universe no one recognizes Superman when he puts the glasses on, and that's it, you don't have to explain it any further than that. People will be on board. The moment you start getting into the minutia, that's when people start asking questions, and your mythos will fall apart.
Because you tried to make it realistic, and then you made it worse.
Mm-hmm.
But go ahead.
You just start begging more questions.
Yeah, you're bringing attention to it. It's sort of like you have like this itty bitty mole at the corner of your mouth, and no one thinks anything of it until you try to cover it up with makeup, and they're like, "What are you trying to cover up there? Oh, that's a mole. Wow, it's a big old mole."
Mole, moly, moly, moly.
I knew it. Anyways, Adam Warren's work, go pick it up. I don't think we can say that enough. Any other notes, guys?
If you can't enjoy anything Adam Warren's done, you should just stop reading comics.
Absolutely. So overall, like I said, you know, especially pick up his early Dirty Pair stuff because it's excellent. Adam, if you're listening to this, please draw noses again. This show's Ben.
And JT from Saskatoon.
And TV's Mr. Neil of DeCN.com.
And we're saying good night.
So long.
Farewell.